How much were you paying attention to the NFL draft, Randy?
Yeah, you know, I watched it. I was, first of all, I thought they did a really nice job. And in fact, I was communicating with them over the last couple of days and just acknowledging that I thought they made the best of that situation. And, you know, it was fun. I think for all of us, anything that's live has got a lot of appeal right now.
Yeah, I wonder what those conversations entailed outside of, some compliments. Was there anything that you think the NFL maybe assisted with in terms of overcoming any obstacles or challenges?
Well, certainly, you know, and obviously I imagine the two of you are working remotely and you've got some fantastic person working the board back at the station. I think everybody
he's
is
okay.
concerned.
He's okay. He's just fine.
He's okay.
Yeah, he's
you know,
just
we're all dealing with the, you know, the challenges of technology that was never really intended for this purpose, right? I mean, we have our home networks and it serves the service really well. But I think we're stressing our system. So, you know, whenever you're doing what was done in the NFL and what we're going to do Thursday night, you are worried and concerned, you know, that these systems, you know, might not hold up to that extra pressure or stress. But, you know, we have backup plans and you just have to roll with the punches. And if nothing else, I kind of feel like the fans are all and your listeners included, are all giving everybody just a little bit of a break, understanding that these aren't ideal situations.
Yeah, they're certainly not ideal for scouting departments and for general managers who, you know, want to have as much information as possible. They want to be able to interview guys face-to-face. We were talking to a scout recently who had just talked about the difference between, you know, interviewing someone over a Zoom call or a Skype call versus in person, how different those two things can be just from being comfortable settling in and getting a true read on someone. But after this NFL draft experience, and not to just keep it on this one same topic, but have your general manager's sentiments changed? Have their scouting departments changed? What have communications been like with you and your general managers in terms of the challenges they've faced trying to scout, trying to find out more about these players, trying to get medicals on these players? Was there ever any desire for them to be asking you to push, say, the draft back like it was in the other league?
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, it's a great question, by the way, but interestingly enough, that was one of the primary questions we asked when we looked at whether or not we would go ahead with the April 30th date. And the feedback to our football operations group was that the GMs really felt ready and they wanted to go ahead with that date because we did. You know, we did offer that we could postpone the draft and give them more time. But to the infinite credit of the GMs and their teams, they said no. They were ready and they wanted to go ahead with the date as planned.
So what is the actual setup then? Is it going to be exactly like the NFL draft where you send out equipment? I imagine you don't have the deep pockets the NFL does. You're not sending out, what, like hundreds of iPhones and lighting to different players and general managers? Like what is your setup going to be like on Thursday?
Yeah, you know, it's going to mean everyone's going to be doing it remotely. No, you know, we're not sending out hundreds of iPhones. But, you know, I think people, you know, we're lucky we live in a world where, you know, a lot of people, most people have, you know, devices. And, you know, I think we're just going to get everybody connected the way, it'll be, you know, in a very similar way. You know, our panelists will be talking, doing analysis and commentary. They're going to make the picks. I am not going to make the picks as I customarily would do. And the reason for that, it was just one more moving part that we decided we would forego this year. So I don't get to be, I don't get to do that, which I, you know, quite honestly, it's such an honor to call a young man's name, you know, knowing that this is a moment they've waited a lifetime for. But you know what? I'm going to let our friends at TSN handle that. I'm going to do an opening commentary just to acknowledge the significance of the draft and this moment in time that we're all part of. And then the draft will move in. And I think we're just going to get everybody connected to the best of our ability. Actually, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And my instinct is that it's going to be a great success.
Talking to Randy Ambrosi, CFL commissioner. So what happens after that, Randy? Because we know the season is originally scheduled to open June 11th. Training camps are like right here. Like, what is the plan? Are you in a wait and see approach? What are you waiting on? Is there a time where you expect to have some sort of announcement? Where are we?
Yeah, you know, we are all learning in a world, which includes you both. You know, sports people are not the most patient group on the planet, but we're learning to be patient. Right now we there are still unanswered questions, and we have we don't know when we're going to be ready to go. We want to be ready when we're ready, I suppose, if we could characterize it that way. But there are still unanswered questions, as of course, there's the border itself and, getting players back and forth. I just listened to a bit of your show before we started, and obviously talking about the NBA and players having to cross the border and the issue of quarantine. So, boy, we have gotten really good at scenario planning. We could be scenario planning specialists when this is all said and done. But we, we're going to have the draft, and then we'll go back into a wait and see mode and continue to gather information, talk to officials at the, health officials and the government, and see if we can't get some football in this year. But largely, it's a lot of planning and a lot of wait and see.
Yeah, and of course that makes sense, right? Because you don't know where we're going to be, just like the rest of us. And so why announce plans? Why announce hard dates when all of those things could be swept away instantaneously? It just, there's really no upshot for it. It really does seem like most leagues are in the same boat as you, where it's just scenario planning, and discussing with, yes, medical officers, teams, general managers, owners, and players about, what it could look like. I do wonder, though, what type of composition you have of those groups. Is it a collaborative? Are these collaborative discussions? Do you have players and owners or players and general managers or coaches? What is the composition of your main group when it comes to discussing these types of ideas and these types of scenarios?
Yeah, the teams are rolling up from their football operations group kind of up through their presidents. As we're looking at any particular issue, we're asking the teams to drill down and then pull that information back up. So generally speaking, on a call that we're talking about something relating to the schedule, the possible schedule scenarios, we'll end up having the 9 team presidents on the call with our football operations group, because there is a certain reality to not having too many voices on any one call. Like, it just becomes chaotic and less efficient. So what we've been trying to do is, and the teams have done a really good job of this, each one of the presidents has done a very good job of coming to these calls exceptionally well informed, having discussed these issues with their, with their GMs and coaches. So yeah, we're again kind of pulling everything up from the teams and then passing it through the team presidents to facilitate more efficient conversation.
Randy, what does return to action without fans look like for the CFL? Is that economically viable for this league if the fans are not allowed back for an entire season?
Well, we're looking at it, but I would say it's not a high likelihood for us because of our, because of our revenue model so heavily relies on bums and seats. So, one of the things that I've admired about our board of governors through this is their willingness to be creative, and they've asked us to be thorough. So we're looking at all of these scenarios, but that's not a high likelihood for us. And frankly, it's going to be odd to watch sports if any of them. I think we're seeing soccer in parts of the world getting primed to start back up without fans. I think it'd be odd to watch sports that way. But the answer for us is, look, we're looking at it, but I would say it's not a high likelihood.
So what do you mean by high likelihood? As in, like, you wouldn't return until fans were allowed, or you're bullish enough in the way things are going that you think fans will be allowed?
Well, again, we just don't know. So, I'd say, we've got an economic model almost completed on what you would have to do or what it would look like to play without fans. But the bigger issue is the complexity of playing at all. And the complexity of playing at all is going to first start with what are healthcare officials going to let us do? Because a football team by its own nature, you know, by the time you look at training camp, so we are well in excess of any of these group numbers that they're talking about where, you know, limits on the size of groups. It's not like a basketball team or even a hockey team. I mean, football teams by their nature are so large. By the time you add football operations, coaches, scouts, and training staff, all of those things, you know, you're talking about groups well through 100 people. So we don't even know if we can do that. And until such time as we get a line of sight to what the government might allow us to do, I had a call last night with our team doctors, and it was an hour spent just talking with one another about what they're hearing and what they're learning from conversations within each of the provinces they operate in. And again, we just kind of ended up with a long laundry list of things that we have to figure out before we'd be able to bring our players together. And then there's the whole question of, are you going to test? And if you're going to test, how often do you need to test? And do you need to isolate? And then what would it be like to try to isolate a football team, you've got 45 active roster guys, but you've got practice roster players, you've got injuries. So these are all the things we're trying to understand as we think about whether we can even get our players onto a football field.
Yeah, and it's unbelievably complex. I just think that your league has that added complexity of, hey, what exactly are we going to do without the fans, as Ben mentioned it. And if there are no fans, if it is not going to go that way, would it be in your estimate that the season would be canceled?
Well, I'm not going. I've just chosen philosophically not to go down that particular rabbit hole because I'm an optimist by nature, and I'm, you know, how does the phrase go? Hope springs eternal. Look, all of the, you know, you have to acknowledge that all options are on the table. But right now, I am hearing, you know, from our doctors that there's lots of work being done on treatments. Of course, the question of this vaccine still hangs out there. We're not in a mode where we're acknowledging, the worst case scenario. We know it's there. Of course, you can't be silly and pretend that it's not there. But for the moment, we're hoping that we can have a football season and a Grey Cup in 2020. But, you know, again, we don't know enough to answer the question. So we just continue to do the work. And you know, I think it's just good. It's good for the soul to be optimistic that this too shall pass.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's the way we feel when we're talking about sports and the possibility of them coming back sometime this summer. Your league also has the added benefit of playing in a couple of provinces that weren't as hard hit, maybe three provinces really, that weren't as hard hit by this, that are working their way back a little bit quicker than maybe Ontario and British Columbia, the middle of the country. Is there a thought of maybe moving some games, some training camps, just moving things towards those facilities?
Yeah, again, those you'd be amazed at how many different creative scenarios you can create when you put a bunch of people in a room that want, or you get them on a phone who desperately want the game to resume. So we have been looking at everything, including, you know, say two or three city centers, one or two city centers, one city center scenarios for getting, you know, for getting the game back on track. And every one of them contains the same fundamental complexity that we just referred to. And that is, you know, until you know what the rules are going to be around group size. So again, now imagine not just bringing together one training camp, but bringing together nine of them, and all of the things you would have to be able to account for. You know, you're talking large rosters and large groups of people. So yeah, we're looking at those things, and you're right. So, I had a call yesterday, and they were sharing with us that when Premier Mo in Saskatchewan did his rollout of the phases of how they would engage, re-engage the community back, back into action. And after he rolled out the provincial strategy, and by the way, Premier Mo is just an exceptional person. The very first question that was asked after he went through this long piece on how they were going to get the economy back on track, the very first question was, what about the riders? Yeah. And you just have to love that the passion, fans have, for the game. But, again, we're looking at all of those things, but we just don't know.
Yeah, if you would have been able to bet on that question, that it's like, what will be the first question? What about the what about them would have been, I think, like a minus 1,000 favorite? Like, it would have been like a heavy, heavy, heavy. You might not have even been able to bet on that. Okay, if we're talking scenarios here, what's the most outlandish one you've ever heard? We're not going to hold you to any of these things, but is there one thing in your mind that you can think of right now, your mind's eye, where either an owner or a general manager came to you, you've got one guy in the league that just shooting out the spacey ideas where you're like, what do you want? What are you thinking about?
Well, listen, you can't invite me onto this amazing show of yours and then expect me to want to get into trouble. So
you don't have to name names, just a scenario, someone where you're like, man, what do you...
Yeah, listen, I would say one of the things I love about getting up every day when I get on these calls is there's just so many people that are passionate. And you know what happens when you put people with passion, into a group with other people with passion. You get some amazing ideas. Some of them are not going to work. And at some point, part of the joy of this process, if you can find a silver lining, which I try to do in my day-to-day life, is that you have a little bit of time on your hands, so you can listen to it all, right? You can take it all in, and you have a smile, and you can imagine the other people on these calls having a similar smile. And so far, we've had enough good sense and decorum that nobody has yelled screamed into their phone that's the dumbest thing they've ever heard. But it has certainly been fun to listen to these amazing people share ideas that have, let's say, limited practical application.
Yeah, like playing on like an oil rig in the ocean or underwater. Yeah. All right. Right. Randy, we appreciate the time, and good luck going forward, and enjoy the draft on Thursday. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thanks, and good luck to both of you, and I hope you and your families both that you're all safe and sound.